Welcome to the Talking Security Podcast. We will talk about items related to Microsoft security. Welcome to another episode of the Talking Security Podcast, part of our special DevSecOps series. My name is Frans Oudendorp and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Poyan Gebasi, Sander Ten Brink. Welcome, guys. We're back.
Yeah, and today, it's good to be back.
Yeah, definitely. And today, we are excited to host April Yoho as a seasoned professional from GitHub, where she plays a pivotal role in advancing secure development practices. With her deep expertise in DevSecOps and experience in empowering developers to integrate security throughout the development process, April brings valuable insights into the evolving landscape of DevSecOps. And AI helps me with that. And I think that was amazing, that intro. So in this episode, we want to know more about this, what April does, and we will ask everything from April. So let's start. April, welcome. Can you explain maybe a bit who you are and what your role is within GitHub?
Awesome. Yeah, thank you all for having me. So my name's April Yoho. I'm a senior developer advocate at GitHub. I basically go around the world teaching people content around GitHub, whether it's DevOps, DevSecOps, anything kind of end-to-end delivery on the GitHub platform. I've been at GitHub for about 18 months, actually coming up on 2 years. And prior to that, I was at Microsoft for about 5 years. And I've been in the tech industry for about 25 years. So I started off in the operational space, moved into development. And all through that time, I've had many roles, worn many hats, seen and done many things. And that was an easy transformation for me to go into DevOps and into the cloud as well.
So guys, I think it's your turn. You have a lot of questions. We know we prepared a few of them. So who wants to start?
Well, I can actually start. So April, I met you, I think, at Azure Lowlands earlier this year in 2024. And we kind of talked a little bit about, you know, me being part of this talking security and like inviting you to the podcast. And I asked you what you were busy with. And you were like Azure Lowlands. Also, I did like a triathlon and like scuba diving somewhere. And that's really, really cool. I looked up like your GitHub handle, and it also has scuba in it. And I feel like that might be a big part of your identity. So before we get into all the nitty gritty, maybe can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So my GitHub handle is Scuba Ninja. It was actually a nickname that my mother gave me when I was a small child, because I learned to dive when I was pretty young, to scuba dive. Mm-hmm. And I've been diving for a really, really long time. So yeah, as I mentioned to you, Sender, when I saw you at Azure Lowlands, I do a lot of diving, a lot of trips abroad, a lot of UK diving, wreck diving, technical diving. Absolutely love the underwater world. The sea life is amazing. The wrecks are good. I still have yet to dive in the Netherlands. But I'm desperately trying to make that happen. I was supposed to do it a couple of weeks ago, but plans fell through. So I'm trying to make it happen.
That's okay. So today we're going to be deep diving in all things GitHub around the DevSecOps. I think that's a really good one. So yeah, Poyan, what do you still want to know about April?
Well, I mean, Sander, as you mentioned, I know April for a longer time ago. We met years ago at Build when she was the DevOps. And I know how deeply she is involved in both tech and Sparta, well, as you explained as well. And can you also share us about your motivation? What's motivating you to be an advocate in the past for DevOps and nowadays for GitHub and GitHub security as well?
So I think for me, I started up years ago I worked for years in companies where there wasn't documentation. People held on to their knowledge really closely, like really close to the vest, because that's how they secure their jobs. That was a culture problem that we faced. And I saw a lot of the culture problems relay into how we deployed data centers, how we deployed software. And it wasn't until I learned about DevOps working practices, agile practices, that there's a better way. But I think for me, like I started writing notes of how to do things because I would forget, how did I solve this problem? Because we're always kind of wearing many hats in a lot of our roles. And years ago, someone goes, start a blog. And I'm like, nobody wants to read what I have to say. Like, nobody's interested. I started a blog, and then actually it was the late Abel Wang who I spoke to one day when I was at Microsoft. He goes, would you like to come on the DevOps lab? And I literally went running around my house for like an hour and a half, screaming and excited. Like, And then I was like, why does anyone want to see me on video? Like, I don't understand. What do I have to share? You know, what do I know that is going to be valid for someone else? And it was through blogging and through recording my learnings, even though they were simple to me or quick fix, it's helped thousands and thousands of people. And that is the motivator for me, is helping others. So when I see others solve a problem or succeed because I shared my knowledge, I found that to be massively empowering. And that's how I've kind of stayed in advocacy. And also I get to work with product groups and give that feedback. So we're kind of like this mechanism between the community, enterprises, and the product group. And it's really cool to actually see a viable thing as an end result and to see that impact on others.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, that's how I know you from the community and of course the Able and the rest of the team as well. Can you also, we shared a lot about your background, but can you also talk us about your career path? What led you to become a senior developer advocate at GitHub? What was the moment of changing from DevOps to GitHub? What did trigger you or motivate you to take such a step?
So I've been at Microsoft for about 5 years, and I couldn't figure out my next role. Whenever you start into a role at Microsoft, about 6 months in, your manager's like, what do you want in your next role? And you're like, well, hold on, I just got here. But it's always about growth mindset at Microsoft and building who you are. And I'd already been doing a lot with GitHub products for years. I've been working on the GitHub platform with code, pushing code up and a lot of the development features and the DevOps features. And a role came up in the UK, and I thought, I'm not going to take this role, but I'm going to apply anyways. I just kind of felt like there was an open door, but I didn't think I was going to get it. And then I got it. And then I made the move because I had been working with GitHub. I was a little hesitant, as you are with any new role, like new people, new things. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really motivated me to move to GitHub was I knew a lot of the people on the team in advocacy. Martin Woodward leads the team. A bunch of other folks that are well-known in the community, the enterprise space that I've worked with previously. And that gave me the kind of like, we're doing the right thing. I believe in the product. I believe in the platform. And that was what pushed me to really move into my next step and my next role.
Amazing. Sander, what the...
Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking, right? So you're doing a whole lot of... So what are the things that you are maybe very proud of or very excited about that GitHub is doing in this DevSecOps space? Let's kind of start a topic on that.
Yeah, so if we all think about DevSecOps, and let's talk security for a minute. I always go into a talk and ask everyone, who's a security expert? And like, no one raises their hand. A developer, engineer's like, I want nothing to do with security. Nope, not interested. We know the security person is the person that always comes into the room and says, this isn't secure, we need to do it better. They're always slowing down our projects. Like, that's how we know security. And when I was in engineering at Microsoft, actually, many years ago, we had to become empathetic and understand the importance of security. And I always say to people, you know, security starts the day your developers clone their code to their devices. We need to think of it then and there, not after we've pushed a password into the cloud or into our code, but when we're cloning that code. So I think for me, that was kind of the initiation of it, understanding it, having the empathy. And then security is hard for someone where that's not inherently my background or my passion. Having that empathy was hard for me. But what I've seen in the industry is that we've started off with this idea, getting everyone to understand that's kind of the step one. And that's where I spend a lot of my time today. But then saying, we want to bring these tools closer to the developer experience because there's benefits to this. So if we've already pushed a password into production and there's a breach, that costs the organization millions and millions of dollars. If we can address these issues early and often, we stop those from getting all the way to production, and the cost to our organizations, the breaches, have less impact because we've caught it early. And having AI behind that has been a massive game changer in the last few years. We've put some intelligence behind the security features, but we've brought those tooling to the developer side to say, we're not going to inhibit you, but we're going to help you resolve security issues. We're going to identify them. We're going to make that an easier and a better experience for the developer, and that every engineer, every developer can address security things and be aware of it. They don't have to be an expert per se, but everyone is now responsible and aware of it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like, I do care about the security thing. Like, I'm not going to say I'm a Linux like network master or something, but I find the idea of security interesting. That's why I'm on this show. But it's also true that it's something that, you know, I'm hired to build features. So it's always kind of a thing that's like, you know, low on the list of priorities. And I think for this, where we see a lot of AI being used to do the fun stuff, like do the creative stuff, like using AI for security features and like letting reporting to developers what's wrong or even fixing things makes just a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think when we do, when we go and talk about security now in the GitHub space, we have a phrase, found means fixed. It means that the security tooling in GitHub have actually found the issue, but it's proposed a solution. And it's up to you as the human to decide if you want to accept that, dig down deeper, or reject the changes and the suggestions. But that has changed and leveled the playing field. Let's think about my one of my favorite features for security is Dependabot in GitHub. So when you're working on a project, right, and you're consuming dependencies, and I think, 60% of organizations consume open source packages. How do you manage those? How do you manage those dependencies? And they're a huge source of security issues that come with that. A lot of benefits, but then we also think, how do we keep track of that? And I work with organizations that have a lot to manage. So Dependabot alerts are fantastic. They give a suggested fix. They help you out. They save a ton of time. In the past, it would be like, oh yeah, someone would highlight a security issue to you. You'd have a couple meetings over it. A couple weeks later, you might have a fix. Now with Dependabot, it's like, great. We know what we need to do. We can test it, push through our pipeline, and get that fix out pretty quickly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like at the organization I'm working for, we're currently using Azure DevOps, and we're also considering or even busy migrating to GitHub. And I'm something that's something I suggested to the business and saying, like, yeah, but why? Like, you know, it's just another place that hosts your code. And I would, like, I'm not selling out for GitHub here. I'm just really, really happy because exactly something like Dependabot. I said, like, do you know how much time developers need to actually should spend updating their dependencies? Not a lot of developers do, but we should. And that would end up being a lot of time. And yeah, well, that's now just kind of a fixed issue with Dependabot. And you can also self-host these things with other tooling, but Dependabot really makes it so much easier that you don't really want to go back. I think it's a real game changer.
It is. And I think one of the things we talk to people about is when they're thinking about it, they're just like, what's the benefit? Okay, let's take one package, one found issue with Dependabot. How long would it take you all to time to identify? So when we talk about DevOps practices, what's your time to identify that problem? Really good examples. That are publicly Googleable, searchable. Capital One had misconfigured firewall and they had people injecting into their network for like 18 months. 18 months it took them to find a firewall misconfig. So when we talk about good DevOps practices, time to recognize where that problem is, and then time to remediate. So when you start looking at those numbers in organizations, you know, it took Capital One 18 months. And that's a firewall config. But if we look at code and look at, you know, breaches we've had in the past, how do we do better each time? And if we've had a breach, we've had a, you know, an injection into our code, how do we deal with that? How do we manage it? And those are the measurements, the door metrics that we look to improve upon. And so few organizations do. They're like, well, we can't afford a breach, but then we can't afford security. It's like, well, you got to pick one.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the adoption is, I think, a key element, April. That's, I think, something that we mentioned and talk about a lot in our episodes as well, is how great it is that Microsoft, and in this case, GitHub, of course, as well, is investing instead of bringing the developers into a different ecosystem and saying, okay, here is your security findings and recommendations. But instead of doing that, brings that information to the developer itself. One of the features that we mentioned a lot is, for example, the PR integration that Defender for Cloud has with Azure DevOps, for example. I mean, it's great. Bring that information. It's a security risk. Bring it to the developer. So that's definitely a key. And I think we started these episodes with the endpoint because you mentioned as well. I mean, the risk starts when the repository is cloned the first time. Mm-hmm. And we see that, I think, all three of us with our customers on different aspects as well, from small to medium to enterprises. They are all having their own challenges when it comes to adopting the DevOps practices, and let alone going towards the DevSecOps. Are there any scenarios that you can share with us from your opinion, what you see with your customers, and also how GitHub helps in that adoption process, the customers?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that come to play. So I think the reality is we have a lot of customers using Azure DevOps still. So with that, you have GitHub Advanced Security integrated or capable into Azure DevOps. I was doing a bit more in that space. I haven't touched that space as much recently. Most of my customers have been in other spaces in the sense that like they have invested in multiple tools. So right now, majority of the customers I'm seeing in probably the past 9-10 months, a year, have all invested in, let's call it 10 or 12 different tools, maybe 20 different tools. And we're seeing tool sprawl. So even though I have a lot of customers using Azure DevOps, I have a lot of customers that are using Azure DevOps, GitLab, Bitbucket, someone's server in a corner. Like there's been such sprawl across organizations. That's actually something more that they're combating than just Azure DevOps and GitHub Advanced Security. So I'm seeing a lot of customers that have sprawled their estates or they've taken on that DevOps mentality. Yeah, you guys can go, you all can buy whatever software you want and do it, works for you. And we had that mentality at Microsoft as well. However, we tried to stick to our own tooling first. And we didn't stray from those when we were developing internally in engineering, but we might have had to bring in a third-party tool or understand a customer had another third-party tool. So sprawl is where we're seeing it. So everyone's trying to bring it into one platform. So we see a lot of people now that are seeing the GitHub experience as an end-to-end platform with a security piece. So that's kind of the story that I'm spending a lot of time around is the end-to-end full, you know, capability within GitHub. Not just, you know, we're not just a code repo anymore. We're not just CI/CD. We're all of it. So once you overcome that barrier of, wow, there's all this end-to-end capability from, you know, the inception of an issue or an idea all the way to delivery, and then it's talking about the GitHub Advanced Security and just where security is involved in every step. There's been huge, huge steps made in enterprise management of accounts, controlling repositories, being able to put in rule sets and have a lot more authentication and security around those, and also consistency, which has been really helpful. So consistency is also a really good part of security. When you have developers kind of going out and doing their own thing every time and, oh, here's a repo, we have no guardrails, if you will, around it, no templating, no blueprints. We then have that management overhead issue. So we really focus on getting everyone into GitHub and bring them in from other platforms. And then how do we template? How do we put in the guardrails that we need for consistency and delivery as well? So that's through the EMU piece, the enterprise managed, I forget what EMU stands for. It's the enterprise account. Thing. I should know the name, but I don't know. And enterprise managed users, that's what it is. Oh, so many acronyms. Yeah, and then how do you template your repos and put in those guardrails with things like rule sets and repo rules? And we've put out some new features around that in the past year. A lot of them are in public beta for a lot of them. There'll be some announcements at Universe about some new features as well. We're pretty hot on making it an enterprise platform that gives you that consistency. And then we can talk about the other tooling, you know, how we automate things. And when you automate things, by default, you're lowering your security risk as well, because you've taken out the human element, right? We're the problem every time. So I think a lot of it's about still DevOps practices, basic stuff, you know, getting those things. And same things we encountered when we start talking about the cloud, whether it's Azure, GCP, or AWS. How do you secure the cloud? It's, again, putting in the guardrails. It's templating, getting that consistency and the security set up. So we're still kind of in that conversational piece with a lot of customers now. And then it's the individual features. Like, do they want GAS? Do they want actions? Do they want this? Do they want that? So it's definitely getting that end-to-end transformation story out there. And that's been really, really good with a lot of customers. So that's pretty much where most of the ones I'm seeing are in that space right now.
So I think that's really good. I just caught you saying something like, you just said, like, you know, the DevOps principle, simple stuff is what you said. And of course for you and for me, I would like to hope for, you know, for us as podcast hope, it comes a little bit more natural to us because we're talking about it, we're busy with it, we're interested in it. Maybe that's already part of my question actually, or the answer to my question is, so what is from your point of view or GitHub's point of view, if it is such simple stuff, why is it so difficult?
And you're right. You should never, as someone who is publicly facing, ever say simple when it comes to a concept, because we're public children. No, that's a great shout out. That's a mistake I haven't made in a while. So I think I meant it more as like the fundamentals of DevOps, right? We have the fundamentals of DevOps that many people don't know, and still a lot of lot of customers are still struggling with. And then you're throwing in AI. And actually, I'll give you a really good story around this. This happened at Techorama Belgium this year, not the Netherlands, but in Belgium. Someone came up to me and goes, well, we're having a problem with our junior engineers. And they started describing the problem. Now, all of us on this podcast are over the age of 30, I hope. Just, yes. Okay. Right. So, Sander, his comment was, we're struggling with junior developers, junior engineers, because they don't know the fundamentals. So kids these days have so much access to getting code and learning code earlier than I did. And then now as they're coming into the workforce, they haven't learned the things that my generation had to learn. So this person was going, AI is a problem, AI is this, and da 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 da. And I said, well, hold on, let's talk through it. What you have is actually a DevOps problem. You're a senior engineer in your organization. You need to take the time and teach the junior engineers the fundamentals. And you know what? Somebody years and years ago, when I started off, had to explain to me the fundamentals. The amazing thing about the younger generation, you know, kids coming out of university, going into university, they're getting so much more access to free resources, getting their hands on code, learning these things. Whereas, you know, being in the workforce for a long time, I didn't have that stuff. I had to build everything from scratch. I had my own home lab. I had to, you know, I didn't have the cloud. So we have still some fundamental DevOps problems, even with AI injected. And this was brought up, and this person was like, no, it's an AI problem. Like, take out AI. Take out this comment about they don't know the fundamentals. Talk about infrastructure as code. Oh, yeah, they do infrastructure as code. I said, okay. Have you ever had them deploy a server in Azure by hand, pointy clicky? And he's like, no. I said, make them do that and watch how many mistakes they make. And then teach them how to, you know, do these things. And I had about 10 people around me that were supporting that statement. This person just was like, no, it's an AI problem. It's like, it's not an AI problem. So, yeah. So it's definitely something where as time has progressed, people are coming into the market with such great knowledge, but not always getting the fundamentals. So people that have been in the industry for a while, we have lived and breathed a lot, and we bring that knowledge and share it. So I think the fundamentals of DevOps, like, and people hear them a lot, but I don't think they're good at practicing them. Same thing with like our own, we're just humans. Like, we hear a thing, we're like, oh yeah, I know that, but we're not good at actually doing it. Like, I know I need to eat my vegetables. I know I need 8 hours of sleep at night, but I'm still going to get like 3.5 hours of sleep. I'm not going to eat a vegetable. And then I'm going to go complain that I'm tired all the time. So, you know, I think it's more of a human thing. We just have to stop, go over the fundamentals, take some time and learn it. And even though there's simple things, it's walking before you can run. And it's just understanding the fundamentals and practicing them day in and day out. And it's like a muscle, right? It's, you're training your brain and your emotions to react and understand these principles.
Yeah. I think it's good. And the things that you say, they really, they resonate with me. Cause I remember I was in college, and it was like about seven years ago now, I think 7.5 years ago, I finished college. And in college, you know, we did deploy applications. We right-clicked in Visual Studio on some servers, or we did FTP stuff, but we never really learned how to actually deploy applications. We just usually just showed the code to the professor, and we handed in the binaries, and that's about what we did. So then I remember going to, like, you know, going to a real job and being able to deploy stuff. And I found the idea of like CI/CD, oh, that sounds scary. Pipelines, how does that even work? And then in the end, you figured out that it was just a few steps, and it wasn't complex. It was also, I mean, it is, the idea of it is simple, but like learning it is also just such a different thing than just learning how to do software engineering.
It is. It's its own skill set. And you brought in a really good perspective of that, because where I said simple and shouldn't have, it is something that I've taken for granted. And actually, I had this conversation with someone the other day about it. I was with a customer many years ago, and we deployed their application into Azure. We took a physical server sitting behind a desk in their site, deployed it to Azure. And then the whole point was to containerize and automate it and scale it. But step one was like, can this run in Azure? And it did. And even just that running in Azure, it improved their compute capacity. And the customer was so happy. And I remember sitting with my team, and they were like, yeah, whatever. It's one server in Azure. I went, guys, stop. This customer doesn't know Azure. They don't know cloud. They literally had a physical box and a massive pain point in their organization. We just opened up doors for them. Let them be happy, celebrate their happiness and their learning journey. And that is something that we have to remember to do, you know, and that's why it's good to have lunch and learn. And actually, Sandra, you brought up a really good point, like bringing in people that are younger than us to say, how did you learn pipelines? Because how you learned it does a lot of things. One, shows me what you know. You might teach me something new, which you probably will. And second, just the way you've learned it is probably different to how I've learned it. And there's probably some good takeaways and we can share feedback. And that's why lunch and learns are hands down one of the best ways for a team to learn and grow and let the juniors present, because they have such great knowledge and they learned it a different way than I did in a different time in their life with different experiences and different tooling. It's great. We can all learn from that.
Yeah. I remember at work every half year, we have like new interns and stuff at work. And it's always really fun. They build their application and then in the final few weeks, they need to deploy it somewhere. And then you see them getting stuck. And that's always really, I'm not going to say that's fun because that sounds mean. What I'm trying to say is then I can help them. I can help them and like deploy to Azure and click it. And then, you know, and then they're just like, oh my God, it's running in the cloud. It's working. And then I'm like, okay, let's now slowly create a pipeline together and see how that works. And now whatever you push, it runs. And it's just seeing something magical click in their brain. And I think it's such a valuable skill set that is not really part of the basic curriculum, which is a bit of a shame. And maybe if we kind of bring this back to the security point of view, I think it's the same there. I think security is not something that's focused on a lot when you start learning software engineering. So at some point, that's just not really on your plate or not on your mind at all.
No, and I've mentored some younger kids, some of my friends' children. They're like I have a friend of mine. Her daughter is a brilliant 14-year-old young lady, and she's like, she's bored at school and she's struggling in school because she's bored, which is, I think many of us can relate to that. School is boring for a lot of us. It doesn't address what we love. And so I start, you know, giving her some books and she loved HTML. Right, here's an HTML book. And I was watching her code and it's exactly that. In class, they're not learning anything about security. Here's a file with some code. Mm-hmm. And then they send the code off for review. They're not doing much else with it. So I think being able to sit with kids and understand security, and especially school age kids in their what they call ICT courses here in the UK, if they're computer classes, teach them security, like internet safety. Let's start with that. Devices. I think actually one of the best things we can teach people about security are mobile devices every time. Because they're in our hand, we think they're private. They're not. They've got cameras. They've got microphones. Apps can listen in the background. And when we're deploying secure code, do you have an Alexa in the background? Is your phone mic on? Do you have apps running that can pull data? Like, it's kind of crazy when you think about how insecure our devices are. It's a little scary. Makes me want to take my phone and like throw it out a window. But we have to start and think about how we're accessing things. Like recently in the past, I don't know, 6-8 months, we've had to use different kinds of auth methods at GitHub and Microsoft. So I have to have my phone to do my thumbprint to then also give a passkey. And like, I have like 3 mechanisms to log in and it's a pain, but I'm doing it because I know if anything happens, we're more, everyone's more secure in that sense. Right. So, but I think it even starts with how we just communicate and how we work as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Exactly. It needs to be more in your mind that it can be done in many different ways.
Yeah. Well, I think, so you think like applications, you know, we're trying to push code and we're trying to deliver applications to our organizations, but what about fun projects? What about, you know, our day-to-day usage of technology? Like it starts, I think, at some basic principles, because if we're going to be lax in one area, are we thinking about it in the other areas? Like who has passwords on post-it notes against their computer monitor, you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
One of the fun things what I normally do with some of my customers is, they, when you start a project and they are like, no, you look at this repository, there's no password added in it at all. And then you just take the first easy password scanning tool and then scan the whole repository, because they were all in the hidden branches and PRs and all kind of stuff. And they're shocked. Yeah, it's your, you will be so shocked how many passwords you will, because as a developer, you are just in your own environment. You think, I'm in my own branch. building your code, putting your passwords there, and then just before you create the PR, you remove it, and then you think it's gone, but it's not gone. It's there and will stay there for always.
I like saying that a password is not just for Christmas, it's for life.
Ah.
All right, you're printing them. You just follow and fold yourself. Yeah, I mean, but it's yeah, until you run auditing tools or see that it's where they hide is crazy. You know, or places that we've put passwords that we didn't remember. And we've all done it. Like, and I always talk about this in every single one of my talks. Who put a password somewhere where they couldn't find it? And you didn't find it. And you're like, oh, no one else is going to find it. Someone will find it. And that's the big thing. It starts with don't put your passwords in your code because they live for forever. They actually do. Unless you go and get them scrubbed, and there's a long process to that. But most people don't even think to go back and scrub their repos, their code bases.
Yeah. That's another thing they say, right? Like the best place to find like free OpenAI keys is to just go to GitHub or go to other places where they store code. Just search for them and you'll probably find them. Now, there's probably a security measures in place, but the joke still lands. It's something that people are not familiar with.
Yeah, and I think actually that's some valid points. So there have been breaches in public code repositories on GitHub. And I think we have to be very clear about this. This is not GitHub's fault. Like, we host the platform. You're managing that. I won't name any names, Uber, have had passwords in private repositories. And this is public knowledge. I'm not sharing anything that hasn't already been written up on the internet that you can easily search. But they use social engineering. So the other thing we have to think about DevSecOps isn't just pushing code. We're talking about the tooling a lot, but I talked about devices and kind of talking to people about security, but also social engineering. And that goes to talking to kids and adults about how to handle things. The whole Uber thing, the latest breach last year was due to a social engineering. Someone got in and found their way in. And it's interesting. I have a friend of mine, I say friend, but someone I know, she walks her dog. I walk my dog. She called me literally last week in hysterics. She's like, Microsoft sent me an email. And I'm like, Microsoft didn't send you an email. Throw it out. And then she called me again. She's like, they're threatening to expose, you know, pictures of me and do this. And I'm like, again, they want to create stress. They've done that. Just go change all your passwords. And, you know, so I had to like walk her through how to do it. But that's all social engineering. And it can be something as simple as a threatening email. And, you know, even my friends that have been in tech for a long time have gotten it. We've seen fake posts. We've seen people come after us and say, you know, it send us DMs on certain platforms, asking requests, making requests. Like, it's hard even as a tech professional to sift through that. That's a really part of DevSecOps we have to be really thoughtful of, is how we're being spoken to, who's reaching out to us, how are we accessing things, because it's a messy world.
I mean, a great example is also with OpenSSH, which it took them years to build a vulnerability. It was like part by part over the years, and then at the end they had a fully functional vulnerability in there. So April, I mean, we do know that GitHub is investing a lot of the things that we mentioned now, like passwords. I mean, GitHub Advanced Security has great features in there, right? You can upload your keys, and GitHub will scan for all the repositories to find who's using your key and that kind of feature. So that, I think GitHub is really investing a lot of in that security. What can we expect from GitHub in coming future? It's something that you can share with us. Or where should we, as an organization or as a developer or as an engineer, focus on for the coming period?
So selfishly, one of the two, in about end of October, so in a couple of weeks, we have GitHub Universe, where we're going to be announcing new features. So I always say to people, have a look at what's been announced. I can say that we also have free learning paths for people to learn. We have a GitHub Advanced Security certification as well that's available. Certifications are nice, but the learning is free. Certifications are a good thing to have to show that you made the effort and did the thing. But, you know, do the learnings. The learnings are there for free. There's a lot to learn about. In terms of some of the GitHub Advanced Security features and tooling, there are some free aspects of it. We have it up on our website, what's available for open source projects, public repos, but go through the learning pathways. If you do GitHub Advanced Security Learning Pathways, great free learnings. We'll put new product announcements out, and we usually put out new announcements on, we do use Twitter still. We'll do LinkedIn, but we'll do videos on YouTube as well, how-tos and all that good stuff. And our documents at GitHub are actually really good most of the time. I'd have to say our documentation is really solid, really good, and you can just dig in and get learning as well.
And one fun thing that I can say about the GitHub documentation is that I don't really know if the documentation is very good because I never have to go to it. Like whenever I need to do something on GitHub, most of the time I could just do it. Like it makes sense UX and UI wise.
I think, yes, I think where the GitHub.com interface can be a struggle for me. If you don't use a feature a lot, it takes a minute to find it, or they sometimes move stuff around a little bit. But for the most part, they're UI improvements. They're not too bad. But I use the documentation a lot for maybe getting deeper into a feature. Like I know I can automate this, but can I do it this way or can I do a thing? And I think you're right. Or most time people are putting up projects, open source projects. So if you want to get hands-on with a lot of security stuff, there are some great open source projects out there that you can get involved in, read up on them, get involved, try it out. But there's always great opportunity for everyone to be more secure by thinking about how they're pushing their code.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Great tips. Definitely. Sander, do you have any questions? Or Franz, maybe?
I have one more question. I think we can make it to the exit then. So for April, in case people want to learn more about you, and maybe I'm stealing a little bit of your outro, Franz, but I'm sorry. April, in case people want to learn more about you or want to find more of you, where can we do that?
I am probably all over the internet, unfortunately. I do have a Twitter account at the April Yoho. I'm on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to find me. And I have a blog, have been using as much. That probably will change in the next bit. But I sometimes push up videos on the GitHub YouTube channel. So I'd highly recommend people subscribe to the GitHub channel because we have so much content that comes out that's pretty searchable and pretty awesome, especially around Copilot, AI, and advanced security features. So those are good places to start. And also my GitHub repo at Scuba Ninja.
Exactly. And otherwise, we can always find you in the water diving somewhere, what we've learned. So
good luck. See you down at 50 meters.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, Sander's the rookie, so we need to show him how, right?
I've been diving. I've been diving once. I've been diving in Greece. It was really fun. I would love to.
Oh, water's beautiful in Greece. Water's beautiful. Yeah, mm-hmm. Netherlands less. It's nice, not Greece though.
No. And Puyan, do you have a last question?
Well, I think we discussed a lot. So yeah, thank you, April, for that. We discussed about GitHub Actions and GitHub Advanced Security. You thought about the Copilot. GitHub is, of course, doing a lot of regarding the GitHub Copilot. Well, it's one of the first and one of the greatest Copilots, if you ask me. I mean, I'm programming these days in languages. But can we also expect, it's already in there, but can we expect more when it comes to security and in the adoption of that?
So in terms of Copilot and security, I didn't really talk about Copilot because I feel like we talk about Copilot everywhere else in my life.
It's that you mentioned it. We didn't want to bring it up.
It's okay. We're need another 40 minutes for this one. But I think the short of the long is yes, Copilot's been used to deliver more secure code. So it allows to iterate. So you could ask it to remove passwords, obviously, if passwords are there, meaning, you know, maybe you ask it to write some code for you. Very rarely has it put a password in code for me. And by rarely it has it, may have generated a block to put a password in or to put a, not necessarily to put a password, but yeah, maybe I need to call a something. But it definitely helps with writing more secure code. You can also ask it directly, can you write more secure code in a repo that you know that might have known issues? But in general, the output of Copilot is pretty stinking secure because it's not exposing passwords. It's being pretty straight to the point. And when you can iterate it, you can ask for more precise code. You can ask for it for more specific examples. And you can have a very good conversation with it. So you can get absolutely specific in what you want. And it's automatically going to give you a more secure code than maybe what someone else has written anyways, because by default, it's not putting the passwords in or anything. So it's been a great tool for writing more secure code. I'm trying to think if we have any metrics on that offhand. I can't remember. I think we do have some published. It'll be somewhere on the GitHub blog or the GitHub website about that. We have some pretty good stats, but we have been measuring secure code with that. But I think how we measure that number also is kind of something we're trying to figure out, and how we can do better as well.
Yeah, so we almost got to my last question. So finally, what I was saying in the beginning, April, I'm not a developer, more on the workplace security side, but I'm using GitHub for a few Jekyll websites based on Markdown. So Dependabot, other CI/CD stuff, what you mentioned, AI, all that kind of stuff is also using by non-developers as well. So I think it's really interesting to hear what is playing in the DevSecOps world, but it also extends, in my opinion, a bit to more or less non-developers that are using websites, whatever, CI/CD pipelines and that kind of stuff for infrastructure.
Yeah, it's helping massively to do infrastructure as code, to write GitHub Actions, to create workflows, and even documentation. Fantastic for writing documentation. Because as developers, we're terrible at writing documentation. And if you're a project manager, someone coming into a project that needs to review it, having the documentation there, having readmes in there really helps. So Copilot is really, really good at helping the non-developer side as well, especially if, friends, I give you a repo and say, right, this is deploying to the cloud. And you go, I have no idea what this is doing. It's all written in C#. And I only work in not C#. Fine. You could ask it to explain it. You can even ask it to explain to you in Dutch. Yeah. I did that last week when I was in the Netherlands. I actually did my live demo with Copilot. I was like, right, explain this code base to me in Dutch. And everyone's like, and it was really good. So you can use your natural language, but you can dig down deep into maybe the methodologies the code is using as well, because you could be someone that needs, as a PM, you're running, you need documentation, you need code coverage, you need certain features. You can ask Copilot if these features are in the code base. So you can have that conversation, non-developer. It's not just for writing code, but yes, we tend to use it for code, but it's great for everyone else that just needs to understand what's happening in those repositories. And it's great for documentation, especially with the new indexing that we have. So,
yeah, and also for documentation, I've used that in the past as well. So that is really fantastic. As we wrap up this episode of the Talking Security podcast, we want to extend a big thank you to April for sharing her expertise and insights into the world of GitHub and DevSecOps. It's been a pleasure discussing all these interesting topics. Thank you, April.
Thank you all for having me.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We hope you found value in today's discussion and gained new perspectives on integrating security into your GitHub or DevOps processes. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast for more in-depth conversations and insights into the evolving landscape of cybersecurity. I say, until next time, stay secure and keep innovating. Thank you.